Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. On today's episode, we're diving into a topic that affects every single one of us, whether you're an athlete, a desk worker, a parent chasing kids around the house, or just someone trying to feel better in your own body. Recovery. I'm joined by Paris Gaines and Dr. Chris Telesmanic from Recover Lab, a Fresno-based recovery and wellness studio that's rethinking how we approach healing, movement, and longevity. We talk about what recovery actually means, why inflammation is so often misunderstood, the difference between active and passive recovery, and how modalities like stretching, saunas, cold plunges, and red light therapy actually work, and where the hype ends and the evidence begins. We also get into youth sports, injury prevention, the importance of education around health, and how Fresno's environment shapes the way we need to think about wellness locally. Let's go meet Paris Gaines and Dr. Chris Telesmanic. Blessed to infiltrate the pod waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best! Chris, Paris, where do you guys like to eat in Fresno?
Paris, take it.
Really, I'm an heirloom guy. I love everything the restaurant has to offer. Everything is fresh. My food is hot. And I love the tri-tip and the surf and turf. So I'm going to have to say heirloom.
Do you get annoyed waiting in that stupid line out front?
You know what? That's why I order my food online and I pick it up, Jordan.
There you go. So. There you go. What about you, Chris?
Pretty much anything Jimmy Pardini touches, I eat. I think he has done a lot to elevate our dining experience here in the Valley, and I'm forever grateful to him.
Have you been to the new place yet?
Yeah, Willow Osteria. Yeah, absolutely.
I haven't been yet, so give me the elevator. What is it like in there? What
traditional American fare. Again, a lot of wood grilled, more traditional Italian dishes, I think. It's not an SO, it's not pizzas, it's not that kind of experience. It's definitely more annex, but a different level. And it was fantastic. And the interior design is unbelievable.
So let me ask you both, because you both work in this kind of recovery, physical therapy, health world. Has a big impact on your diet choices for both of you? Or is that something that's like orthogonal, where you don't really think about your career relative to your personal dietary decisions?
So, no, diet is integral to everything. Being in the recovery space, it's something that we talk about a lot and we'll talk about with all of our clients, but we don't actually give dietary recommendations. I just feel like it's irresponsible not to at least address it, to be available for questions, and to have a relatively significant understanding of it and how it affects overall health and wellness.
Gotcha. And that affects your personal decisions, you think, for yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Everybody's a hypocrite when it comes to diets, but
yeah, no, I have a doctor friend who has a pack every other day. And so it's an interesting world, how thinking about your vocation relative to your personal choices. And sometimes it's a through line for some people and sometimes it's not.
Yeah, I think it's important. And there's actually some really cool things in the longevity space, like wearing a continuous glucose monitor as just a self-experiment. So much that we do in the health, wellness, and kind of a more contemporary longevity world is a study of one, an N of one, which is we're doing things on our own for ourselves to see how we as individuals react. And wearing a CGM is a great example of that, where you can really gain some interesting insight into how foods react to you specifically and how it affects your body and your overall health and wellness.
Yeah, I have a buddy who's a dietitian and works at Children's Hospital, and he got a couple of glucose monitors and gave one to me. And I've determined that I can't go to the brewery anymore. Lesson learned there.
Yeah, there's some shocking spikes in your glucose when you ingest certain things.
All right, so let's start with some big picture questions. Maybe I'll start with you, Paris. What is recovery?
I tell you what, and I would love, we're redoing who we are. And I wanted Chris to really touch on this. I know he's smiling right now, but
sure.
We are, and I'll let Chris take it away. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. So recovery is just another way of saying healing, right? That's what recovery is. Recovery between workouts, recovery between injuries, recovering between anything that happens to us in life is just a term for the time that we give ourselves, whether it's physically, whether it's psychologically, that time to heal. And so that's what recovery is. And obviously, that's something that we focus on, obviously, more the physical than the mental, but it's all part and parcel of being a human being and understanding what recovery is and the significance of it.
Yeah. So I guess I have a number of questions to think about this conceptually. Everyone comes in with a different baseline for what health looks like for them. So how do we know in this world of personalized medicine what we're aiming for, if you will? Like recovery for someone might be quite a bit more extreme to get them back to a baseline than someone that has maybe a lower threshold for what they need. So how do you discern what patients need?
So it's driven a lot by what their individual goals are, right? Everything has to be patient-driven, patient-focused. We don't have a standard set of expectations or guidelines. That is very much what I call medicine 2.0, something we really want to be moving away from, where we have standard protocols, standard procedures. You may fit in that box, you may not. It may work for you, it may not. But this is just the generic application of this particular medication, treatment, intervention, whatever it is. We are very much focused on taking a much more individualized and modern approach. And again, that starts with the conversation. It starts with having that time one-on-one with the patient to learn about who they are, what makes them tick, what they want. Because like you said, it is different for everybody.
Yeah. And I think you're referencing Peter Attia there, who I also follow. And his book Outlive talks about patient medicine 2.0 versus medicine 3.0. And I would summarize medicine 3.0 as ask irritating questions to your physician is kind of how I would summarize it. But I
guess
that's
one way to summarize it. I'm much more optimistic interpretation
of
it.
All right. Yeah. But I guess what you're saying is a better world in some ways, which is where medicine adapts, because there is this kind of status anxiety that I think people can feel like with their medical providers, where their medical provider has advanced degrees, has a lot of schooling, has a lot of knowledge. It can be intimidating to challenge their expertise. And so it seems like you need a balance of people pushing for what they want for their own health, while also medicine adapting to accommodate different goals and outcomes. You walk into a lot of physicians' office, you feel like you're being prescribed goals as well as pharmaceuticals. And it seems like you guys are trying to balance both of those. Is that an accurate statement?
More than balance both of those, transcend them and move past them. No, okay. Because again, it's a function of just time. The reason that we have our practice set up as more of a concierge level service is because frankly, that's the only way that we have the time that we need to learn about, to understand, and to really know our patients, which then allows us to create those more personal goals and personalized outcomes. And again, the antiquated approach where you get 3 minutes with your doctor, maybe 10 minutes with your physical therapist, and then you're just shuffled through this algorithm of care providers, it is impossible to really individualize care in that context. And that's the way that medicine has really existed in the last 50 to 70 years. And there's been some incredible advancements. And thank God for what we've had. I'm not taking anything away from the way that we've done things in the past. We can do better. We can move forward. And that was really the inception of Recover Lab, where I, as a practicing physical therapist for the last 20 years, saw what worked, saw what didn't, really recognized that if you walked into a physical therapy clinic in 2025 and you walked into one in 1985, they really don't look that different. The equipment doesn't look that different. The environment doesn't look that different. The way you provide care doesn't look that different. And that's not acceptable, right? Nothing else has stayed stagnant, not our cars, or financial, nothing. And so we shouldn't either. We should expect more and we should do more. And that's what Paris and I are trying to do at Recover Lab.
And if I can add to this, Jordan, it's a very unique experience when you come into Recover Lab. We want to create the most amazing experience for the client. And really, it starts before they walk in the door. So it's a very special thing that I've been blessed enough to be a part of and that Chris and his wife, Shana, have created, starting with who we hire. Right. We want to hire the best. We want unique, talented individuals that believe in cleanliness and kindness and the client experience. So it's very different. The feel, the culture, the atmosphere is very different when you walk through the door at Recover Lab.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because I know that you guys are using a lot of modalities that are different than traditional medicine, things like saunas, cold plunges. When you're using an array of treatments to address a recovery process, How do you know what the lever is there? How do you, I know we can't really determine causality, like this leads to this, but it seems like it gets complicated once you add a bunch, start to stack treatments. Is that accurate? So how do you think about that and trying to discern what's actually, quote, helping the patient?
So I want to make sure we draw a line and clarify what we are doing in Recover Lab. I wouldn't say is technically practicing medicine. I have a clinical degree, clinical doctorate of physical therapy, and the physical therapy rehabilitative recovery space is absolutely my specialty and has been for decades. But that is fundamentally different than treating patients in a conventional medical sense. And the things that we do are meant to be in conjunction with even a more traditional approach when necessary. We are not defining ourselves as some completely standalone alternative medicine approach to health and wellness. We are giving people that opportunity to experience these modalities, which we absolutely will get into and how we understand them, but to experience them because most people don't have access to them. They don't know what they are. They don't know what value they provide, and they don't know how they could complement their current healthcare approach. And yes, in many opportunities, in many situations, they may replace some of the conventional maybe medications they're on, whether that's pain control medications, narcotics, even blood sugar management medications or blood pressure medications, right? These treatments are extremely effective, but never intended, from my perspective and from Paris's perspective, to just be an out and out replacement of a traditional approach.
Okay, one more kind of broad conceptual question before we jump into services.
Sure.
I want to ask you about inflammation. I'm married to a clinical psychologist, and we have watched a similar track with the word trauma and how it's become this kind of all-encompassing word that includes everything. And it becomes like the trump card you can play in a lot of ways for trying to look at a complex problem and identify something. I look at Gabrielle Monte's work as really
Absolutely.
expanding and making it
Yes.
broad. The danger with broad is what does it refer to? And I feel similarly about the word inflammation that I've heard used in different contexts over the years, and something this causes inflammation. This causes it, we can point to a lot of different things and it causes inflammation. Can you talk about how do we know what we know about inflammation?
We know what we know based on the research that's been done by physiologists, by biologists, by physicians, and all kinds of different healthcare, both providers and researchers. But I do think it's a very intuitive kind of point that you're bringing up, where inflammation is basically used now as a catch-all for everything bad. Everything bad is ascribed to inflammation,
Yes.
whether it's cardiovascular disease, whether it's joint pain, whether it's neurodegenerative diseases, it's all somehow a function of inflammation. Yet at the same time, and this may be where the analogy differs from trauma, inflammation is a completely natural and necessary part of the healing process. And when we try to intervene in an inappropriate way, or maybe an antiquated way, we could say, then we're actually doing more harm than good. The most straightforward example of this is with non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen. Unfortunately, again, if we think back to medicine 2.0, let's take a patient that goes to their primary care with complaints of low back pain. 9 times out of 10, maybe 9.9 times out of 10, what that doctor is going to do is they're going to prescribe some painkiller and probably some anti-inflammatory, most likely an NSAID, a non-steroidal over-the-counter anti-inflammatory. Even though it happens all the time, technically that's against the AMA recommendation on how to address low back pain because that is an extremely ineffective way to deal with it. And again, by artificially blunting your body's natural inflammatory response, which it uses to trigger your own body's ability to heal itself, so thereby you're stopping your body's ability to heal itself, you end up creating a more potentially chronic long-term situation. So, if we go back to that patient, so they go home for another 2 weeks, 4 weeks, they're taking these drugs, they're actually slowing their body's ability to heal itself, they're not feeling any better, maybe temporarily after they take the medication. Then they end up going back to their doctor. You know what? My back still hurts. I still can't lift my kid up off the floor. It's hard to get up and down. Okay, let's do some x-rays. Okay, now you're waiting another couple of weeks. Okay, now we're like 2 months into this process. You're back at your doctor again because it's hard to get in. And then maybe they send you to physical therapy, like 3 months down the line. So it's 3 months of healing that not just that you've missed, but that you've really gone the wrong direction more than likely. And so what we're doing at Recover Lab and what many physical therapists have done over the years is attempted to at least, but it's harder in a more insurance-based model. But to give people an opportunity with musculoskeletal conditions to come in day one, day two, and talk about what's going on, how do I get better? What are all the things that I could be doing conservatively, non-invasively, without pharmaceuticals to optimize my body's opportunity to heal itself? And I think we're going to get much better outcomes that way, and we do.
Just perusing your guys' site and services, you bracket into active and passive recovery. Can you explain the distinction there?
Yeah. And again, like Paris said before, we're in a state of evolution. Fortunately, we're a very young company. And as we are working with our patients and we're offering these different services, we're learning so much from them. We're learning what people are looking for, what works, what doesn't, in terms of how we package these modalities, which are incredibly valuable. But what we have now is basically three levels of care, and we'll talk about them what's to come after this, but active recovery, passive recovery, and then like concierge physical therapy. Active recovery is defined as time that you're spending one-on-one with our stretch techs or our recovery specialists, right? That's when you're doing like one-on-one assisted stretching, mobility work, some soft tissue work like cupping, scraping, working on small pain points. But when you're getting that one-on-one time working actively with one of our stretch techs. Passive recovery, conversely, is where we've created a space for you to enjoy and take advantage of these different modalities that we brought in for people to use. So full spectrum infrared sauna, full spectrum red light therapy, PEMF mats, and cryotherapy. And so those are experienced passively, meaning you're in a relaxed state, you're coming to just enjoy and benefit from those services. It's more of the spa experience at that point as opposed to the active work experience. And then, as the medical director and the physical therapist, I serve again to work with people that are actually working through injuries or significant pain or have more complex issues or just want some help quarterbacking the whole situation. And this is where Paris and I work closely together, almost in the form of a clinician and a case manager, where Paris's role, and I can let him speak to that, but is managing the space and the overall client experience. And I get to focus, I feel fortunate enough to focus on spending all of my time with the patients in that one-on-one setting.
Yeah, Paris, can you talk about your role in guiding patient experience, what that actually looks like?
Well, really, and it really starts when they pull up at Recover Lab. I'm very detailed. I want to make sure every client, we provide a white glove service, really. It's understanding, it's asking the right questions, it's greeting them with kindness as soon as they walk through the door. Everyone walks through that door for a reason, and I want to make sure the experience is absolutely amazing. I have a smile on my face, I greet them. I'm always out in the community. We might have some kind of connection, Jordan, whether it's from a local high school or I was blessed enough to play at Fresno State, so we might have an old Fresno State fan or something like that. So it's really great, man. And I wear multiple hats at Recover Lab, from growth to sales to studio management to education to development. So it's multiple things that I do in order for us to grow the business to be successful. But really, it starts with who we hire, and it starts with making sure we greet every single client that walks through the door, Jordan.
Yeah, I'll have a few more follow-up questions on that a little later, but I want to
Okay.
jump back into stretching here. When I was talking to some friends before we were going to record, they had a number of questions, and we'll start with some of theirs. Does casual stretching have any value if, you're not doing it for a long period of time and you don't have a heavy load that you're using? I'm thinking of like the person that's going out in their front door to go for a run, and they do some little touch their toes, do a little grab their ankle on a light pole. Does that have actual value, or is that more of just almost like a ritual that people do before exercise?
I would put it more in the ritual category than the medical value category. There is some really interesting research that shows that just putting our bodies in different positions connects to the different parts of our brain that control those positions. And when people get locked into very limited patterns of movement, the parts of their brain that were designed to control those more abstract movements start to atrophy. And it's a part of neurodegenerative decline. And so, if I was going to make an argument for some of just those the type of stretching that you were talking about, what I would say is at least you're reminding your brain that your body can move through those positions and move through that space.
Okay.
Is that really increasing mobility, flexibility, and providing the value that we typically associate with stretching? Technically, probably not. That's just because we're not doing it right in that context.
Okay. Does stretching prevent injuries?
Stretching can absolutely prevent injuries. Obviously, when it's done right, not in the way that necessarily you described, but like our stretch techs will spend anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes doing a comprehensive head-to-toe stretching routine that we've developed to target the most significant areas that where people are most tight, most restricted, most injury prone. For example, thinking about injury prevention, one of the most common injuries that our demographic, yours and mine, will suffer from is Achilles tendon ruptures. Fundamentally, that's a function of losing mobility in our feet and ankles, primarily our ankles, which is a function of the muscle length that we have in our gastroc and our soleus, our calf muscles. And so if we get really tight and stiff, yet we want to go play basketball with our son, and you step just the wrong way, boom, there goes that Achilles tendon, and now you're out for months and months. However, if you would have worked on maintaining that flexibility and mobility through not just your calf, but your entire posterior chain, so from your glutes to your hamstrings to your calf, all the way down to your foot, then you more than likely would have not experienced that injury because your body has more available range of motion to travel through as you're out there catching a rebound, jumping, stepping off a curb, whatever it is. The less capacity your body has, the more likely you are to exceed the capacity. That's what an injury is. The more capacity, the more mobility your body has, the less likely it is to experience an injury. Whether it's a traumatic injury like an Achilles tendon rupture, or even some of these just chronic nagging tendonitises, tendinosis, things like that, that we just don't want to live with.
Okay. I wonder, do you get parents, and maybe Paris can talk about this given his athletic career, do you get parents coming in with kids that have maybe done one sport, they've had one motion, one activity where their body is using that repeated motion over and over again? How do you get them to think about flexibility and preparing for longevity when our culture really emphasizes like focusing on a single athletic activity to improve your marketable skills?
Yeah, Paris is the athlete. Paris, you want to take
Definitely. For one, Chris and I have been extremely blessed to hit a few local high schools, Jordan, and the information and education was absolutely tremendous. And just to get some of the questions from the student athletes afterward pertaining to their body and recovery and longevity and diet and maximizing performance through great sleep and diet and hydration, it's been really eye-opening, the high schools that we were able to attend. Just the information that the community does not know, Jordan. It's really pretty crazy. But yes, we do get parents that come in that we have gymnasts, we have basketball players, we have athletes from every sport. And we try our best to educate them and their families on longevity and performance and how to be great in every area. But yes, we're in a scope in a day and age now where it's so targeted, right? You want your kid to be great at this one sport. And Chris's children are athletes, and my children are athletes. And I believe both he and I, we promote multiple sports, right? Different movements in sport. And I think each movement coincides with the next. Yes, I'm a huge proponent of multiple sports. I've always been played multiple sports myself, my three kids that have played Division One, Division Two, football, Division One soccer. So yes, it's all about multiple sports. I've never been an advocate of just focusing on one sport.
Yeah, let's jump back to flexibility. Flexibility seems like a strange health metric to me because it seems like there's so many biological and determinants in your anatomy because we're all built so differently. How do you think about measuring flexibility given how different all of our bodies are?
Yeah, there's really no specific way to measure quote unquote flexibility. What we're looking for is function in the way that our bodies move through space. And you're right, some of that is dictated by our body's anatomy and geometry. Some people's femurs are more externally rotated, some more internally rotated. When some people squat, they need their feet wider with their toes turned out. Others can do it with their feet right together. But regardless of those kind of morphological differences, the reality that we're all bodies that live in the world that we live in, we need to be able to do certain things. We should be able to squat. you know, what we call ass to grass. You should be able to get your butt all the way down into a deep squat. You need to be able to have the hip flexibility to step up on a box or up a tall step. We need to be able to have the flexibility to reach our arms directly overhead without impinging in our shoulders. So when I think about flexibility, what I think about more is, what are some of the movements that we need to be able to do such that we're reducing the risk of injury when we do them? And that determines or is a function of flexibility. So we have, as a physical therapist, of course, but even as our being the medical director of Recovery Lab, we have a series of movements that we can take people through to get an idea of what their baseline functional movement looks like.
One of the things that I've learned just in my own medical journey is looking at things my body tells me as information and that I can learn something. One of the ones that I deal with a lot because I exercise regularly is soreness. So what is my body telling me when I am sore? What does that information mean, really?
It just means that you've done probably something. When we talk about soreness, and again, vocabulary becomes important here, but when I think of soreness, I'm thinking about something like what we call DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness, a natural physiologic muscular response to stress, aka exercise, right? You're lifting weights, you're on the bench, maybe not that night, maybe not the next day, but that next day, man, you feel it everywhere. That's what we'll call muscle soreness. Okay, so again, that's a normal, natural, and desirable response to exercise, because what we've done is we've created micro trauma in the muscle fibers themselves. That is the point of applying the stress of weight training to muscles. We're breaking those muscles down such that we can allow them to regrow bigger and stronger. And again, like you mentioned, it's really about information. It's about reason we put two plates on each side and benches as many reps as we can is because we're, in theory, trying to inform our body, hey, I want to be able to do this. I need to be able to do this. And if you do that enough, the body's going to listen and say, hey, I don't know why this guy keeps pressing 225. I don't know what he's doing with this, but apparently he needs to do this. Let's grow more muscle fibers such that this is easier for him. And so it's the stress, the exercise is the stress is the information, and the physiologic response is, again, the breaking down of that muscle that we experience as muscle soreness. And what that's then telling you as the exerciser is, okay, I've done some trauma, not in a negative way, but I've done some damage to these muscles in a positive way, and I need to give myself that opportunity, again, to recover or to heal before I do it again. Right. There's something that, like Paris mentioned, we've gone out and talked to a lot of high schools and trying to do what we can to educate our community or our youth. And one of the simplest ways that I've come up to say it is stress plus rest equals gains. Stress plus stress equals injury. Right. So the implication there is if we apply stress and we allow our body the time it needs to recover and heal from that stress, that's when we make progress, the kind of progress we want. We get stronger, we get faster, we get bigger. That's what we're looking for. If all you're doing is stressing and you're working through soreness and you're working through pain and it's just stress, that only leads to injury.
Injury.
And that's not an efficient way of creating optimal health or performance.
Yeah, I used to go for a 3 to 4 mile run every morning. And then I started introducing a day off or riding my bike or lifting weights as a kind of an interval between those.
And it's a cross training.
Yeah. And it's been absolutely fantastic for my pace, my heart rate, all those kinds of things. And I think a lot of people get not stuck, but they find something that works and they just want to latch on to that. Mm-hmm. They like the particular physical activity and don't think about how longevity and how that's going to affect you. Like my little brother is a marathon runner and he will just disappear and run 15 miles and it's been, and then inevitably injury happened and he had to rethink like, what am I doing with my exercise routine and what are my goals? But before we jump into passive treatment or therapy, I want to jump to my favorite section, which is called overrated versus underrated. I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you guys and you tell me whether you think they're over or underrated and why. And of course you can pass on any of these if you are not interested in answering them, which I'd like to throw a fun one in there too. We'll start with one that I regularly do, hot yoga, over or underrated for you guys?
You start, Paris.
Oh, man. Certain styles, Bikram yoga, hot, they want you to come in without eating. I had a horrible experience with Bikram yoga. I'm going to say underrated. when used properly. It just needs to be done properly. So I'm going to
Okay.
say underrated.
Okay. So your bad experience aside, you still think it has quite a bit of value for people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What do you think, Chris?
I agree with Paris. I think it has tremendous potential value that isn't always realized in the way that it is applied. There are down, it's you happen to stumble on a particular trigger for me. So this is probably gonna go on a little longer than you had anticipated for a
No,
quick
fire
rapid
away,
fire
fire
segment.
away.
But it, I think it's very important and interesting and significant to me because I think it does have so much potential, but there's not no risk to it. The risk, the downside of hot yoga is that sometimes you're disconnecting a little bit from how your body feels. You're so hot, you're overwhelmed by the environment, you're overwhelmed by the experience, you're overwhelmed by the sweat, and you're not thinking enough about the quality of movement and what your body is actually tolerating well versus what it isn't. Strictly from a physiologic perspective, for men over 40, it might be one of the, if done well, which is a huge caveat, huge. It could be one of the best things that we are doing for our overall health and wellness. I practice regularly, but again, I'm doing it with 30 years of exercise physiology and musculoskeletal anatomy experience and everything else. And the things I see when I'm doing it just give me absolute nightmares when I'm in the studio sometimes. And so it's not something, honestly, that I recommend to many people because I never want to make a recommendation to do something that could end up hurting themselves. And so I do put it in a relative, a higher risk category. I'm basically saying the same thing Paris was saying. I think it's underrated, but not without its problems.
Gotcha. Next one's for Paris, and this is something we share. Paris, growing up in a military family, over underrated.
Oh man, come on now. No, listen, it's what a blessing to grow up in a military family and you move multiple different cities and you're able to adjust and you have to pivot always. It has grounded me as a man, has grounded me as an athlete to just to be able to assimilate into any kind of situation because of that. I've gained a greater appreciation for our servicemen and women who protect our country and defend our country as well, as my dad did. Man, I think it's really underrated, right? When you think about a military family, so much goes on within that you do not know, right? It's a lot of different things on a family to have to pick up and move, but you learn different things and it's really helped ground me and shape me. It's underrated, man. It is. It
Yeah.
is.
The next one's for Chris. Andrew Huberman's podcast, over underrated.
Oh man, just hitting all my little triggers here.
I do my research.
Yeah, I'm gonna say overrated.
Okay.
Yeah, overrated.
Are
I
they too
don't
long, or are you skeptical of providing that kind of information in that format?
I'm skeptical of anybody that has built a career out of providing information in that context, because it always demands that you need more content. If this is his old business model, and many podcasters back to Tim Ferriss, it's if you don't have more content, you're out of work. So
Right.
it really implies or it puts pressure on you to just always be talking about and building up and selling the latest. I saw this with Dr. Oz back in Oprah days. He was hawking all kinds of crazy stuff that was like absolute insanity, but he had a financial incentive and motivation to do because what's he going to talk about on his show? The show's coming up. What are you, if you've already talked about all of the fundamentals and all the basics and all the well-researched evidence, pieces of advice and wisdom, you're going to start selling goji berries and voodoo medicine because you got to fill the air.
Chris, don't
So,
take away my goji berries. I need those goji
okay.
berries. All right, this next one's for both of you, and I ask every guest this. Me and Ed's Pizza, over underrated.
Oh man, Chris.
I say underrated. I'm a Fresno native, Fresno local. I love my Mina's pizza. My wife absolutely hates it, but I love it.
Split household.
Yeah,
Yeah,
oh, very much.
I'm gonna agree with Chris. Underrated. My wife loves the veggie pizza. I was born on the East Coast, so I'm naturally biased on the East Coast pizza. I'll go with my wife. Underrated.
Okay, a couple more here. Either of you, sensory deprivation tanks.
I don't know if we've talked about this. Have you done a sensory deprivation tank, Paris?
I have seen it done. I've never done it myself.
Have you done it, Chris?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, quite a few
What
times.
are your thoughts on it?
So I think it's an incredible experience. And again, like anything, and we'll probably talk about this when we talk about the passive recovery modalities, the quality of the equipment, the quality of the experience makes all the difference in the world, right? I've done quote unquote sensory deprivation in these kind of more pod environments where, like, I'm touching the wall, my butt's hitting the floor. Yes, technically I'm floating, but there's like LED lights, and it's not what the intention was when sensory deprivation tanks were originally conceived of. But I've also had the fortunate experience of using some of the highest quality tanks that are almost the size of the room that I'm in now, where I would walk in standing up in 2 or 3 feet of water and a completely sensory deprived environment as it was originally intended. And that is a truly incredible experience. It's not easy. It's not something that I would necessarily look forward to. It's challenging in a lot of ways, but as many challenging things are, I think it's incredibly, especially in an environment in the world that we live in, where there's so much noise on every level, to give yourself that opportunity or to force yourself into that opportunity to just completely shut everything out and see what's rattling around up here, I think it's incredibly beneficial.
All right, time for a football question for Paris. It was inevitable. Paris, do you think Jahmyr Gibbs is over or underrated? He's destroying my fantasy league. I can't stop him.
Oh, listen, he right now is the best back in the league. I'm going to go underrated completely. His ability to be great at all three levels in the passing game, his vision, acceleration, should be the number one running back in the NFL right now. He is the complete package. And number one, the guy is humble, man. You're not going to hear about him doing anything that's going to destroy his team or the locker room. So yes, Jahmyr Gibbs right now is my guy. I think he's completely underrated. He should be the highest paid back in the league, in my opinion.
Okay, one more. Thoughts on Ashton Jeanty. Came from Boise State, wasn't in the SEC or anything. How do you think he's doing?
So for one, Jordan, as a Fresno State Bulldog, we don't mention the B word around here.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. I apologize. It's like Baltimore
I
won't
don't
say
even
it.
like the color blue, Jordan. Okay. I don't even like the color blue. I just want to let you know. But no, really, just he is one of those talents. He's built low to the ground. His vision, his acceleration is great. Unfortunately, he's at an organization that I don't think has really put forth that running game as a focus of what they want to do. They should have built the O-line. They should have spent more money on the O-line, especially with that pick, knowing they would take an Ashton Jeanty.
Yeah. All right. Last one in this section for Chris. Getting a regular massage from a masseuse, is that over or underrated in your mind?
I would say it's overrated.
Okay.
It's feels good. But like I just said, it's the stuff that doesn't feel good that tends to provide more significant, lasting, and long-term value. Nothing wrong with it, doesn't hurt you, but overrated.
So if someone's, say, I have a friend. He's in his mid-30s. He's had some back issues. He likes to go get massages. Is that really just, he's just having a pleasurable experience? There's not really a rehabilitative aspect to it in your mind?
Yeah, I'm realizing that I'm like qualifying literally everything I'm saying here. There is therapeutic massage, right? And if
Yeah.
there are issues within certain muscle groups that need to be addressed through manual therapy, then that can absolutely be helpful. But that's usually not what's happening when you go to a massage place. It's like it's the oils and it's the whole thing. And maybe they might hit your trigger spots a little bit, but that's fundamentally different than what we do or as a physical therapist or even what our stretch techs are doing in terms of cupping and scraping, where we're really trying to isolate specific pathologies within the muscle, whether it's a scar tissue buildup, adhesions, or restricted blood flow. And we're targeting a treatment to that area. There's a tremendous amount of research and evidence to support the value of that, less so to support just the feel good rub downs.
Okay. I love my feel good rub downs, but maybe
Who
I
doesn't?
won't
But
replace
yeah,
actual
there's
physical
nothing wrong with
therapy.
it.
All
Yeah.
right, let's jump into passive treatments. What's happening to my body? And I get in the sauna regularly. I have one in my house. What is happening to my body when I'm in a sauna?
So a lot is happening. Obviously, are you talking? There's two different types of saunas, right? There's kind of the traditional Swedish sauna, Or there's the infrared saunas.
I'm
Which
using
one
an
are you doing?
infrared. Yeah, I'm using an
Okay,
infrared.
great. So just as a quick background there, a traditional sauna is designed more to heat the air around you, which means you got to bring the temperature way up to sometimes intolerable 170, 180, 190. But when you're in that environment for long enough, that heat infuses into your tissues, you get increased blood flow, you get dilation of the blood vessels, you're getting perfusion of that blood flow through parts of the muscles that it wasn't happening before. Obviously, you're sweating, so you're moving your lymphatic system, you're releasing toxins, you're getting more blood flow to your brain, you get these kind of heat shock proteins, which is just a physiologic response to the stress of heat that is very beneficial. And in an infrared sauna, a lot of those same things are happening, but those are designed such that the infrared waves are heating your tissues directly, which I know it sounds like a microwave, but it's not at all like a microwave. It's just a more efficient way of applying that heat stress to your tissues to create that desirable effect without having to be in such an uncomfortable environment. There's kind of value. The value proposition is very similar. It's just a preference on how you want to achieve those benefits.
Okay.
Lymphification, I didn't mention that. That's through the lymph drainage and movement. That is potentially one of the most significant things, especially for us in the Valley. Unfortunately, there's so many blessings that we have here in the Valley, but high degree of pollution in our soil, our water, and our air is comes along with that. And so there's certain pollutants, certain toxins that we can't get out any other way other than through our lymph system, through sweat. And so if you're not exposing yourself to that type of stress to where you're allowing your body to express those toxins, then they build up and you could have catastrophic results from that.
Okay. My sauna, I can set the temperature up to, I think, 140. And I'm just, when I got out, I was just like, all the way up. How do you think about choosing a temperature? If someone's in your facility and you're like, it's their first go in a sauna, how do you think about where to set them up at?
Again, everything we do is personalized. So it's a conversation before we even go in. That's, again, part of Paris's role as he's helping manage these cases. But essentially, in my experience, anything like 120 to 130, almost everybody can tolerate that. And again, that's the value. That's why we in our studio have two very high-end full spectrum infrared saunas, because people to have all of the benefit, but without that uncomfortable experience of the tip of your nose burning, your ears burning off, and your fingertips and your toes feeling like they're going to melt. I happen to have a traditional barrel sauna at home myself. Sometimes I'm just seeking that more extreme experience. And so again, there's nothing wrong with it. It just isn't as universally tolerated as the infrared.
Okay, let's transition to cold plunges now, which is my favorite. I got my first one in 2017. I took a chest freezer, sealed it, put a little temperature gauge in there, had a little button to turn it on to get it real low. And I did it in tandem with breathing techniques that I learned through this wild influencer named Wim Hof. And it's been incredible for me. And I think what I derive most, I feel, is probably the mental clarity, which I know is connected to my body and how my body is working. But I was a crazy person. I'd wake up first thing in the morning, even in December, and just get out of bed, walk outside, jump in my cold plunge. And I think I had it set at 36, which is pretty low. So yeah, I would bring out a little cup of coffee that kind of made it feel like it wasn't just some kind of medieval torture, but it had the similar feeling of
It's
torture.
torture. Yeah, it's torture.
You might need a wetsuit, Jordan.
Yeah,
Sheesh.
seriously. And then for a while I was doing I didn't do it this past year, but I would go to Yosemite in November, December, and then go to the Panorama Trail, which is you start near Glacier Point and you descend down, and there's that hidden waterfall Illilouette. So I go swimming in there in November just to test my abilities. I've been obsessed with it for a long time, but I've also heard that some of the science is a little murky. So can you clarify maybe what we actually know from literature reviews, peer-reviewed research? What do we actually know that it's doing for me?
So let me start answering that by talking a little bit of a litmus test that I apply to a lot of our passive work, but basically any modality that we're thinking about bringing in. And that is that, and it sounds simplistic, but I feel like if some of these practices have been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and there's some amount of legitimate modern evidence to support their value, I'm on board, right? I'm at least willing to explore them, to experience them, and potentially even bring them into our studio. It's the things that were around hundreds of thousands of years ago and have completely died out. Okay, obviously we don't want those types of experiences and modalities, and I don't necessarily want just what is the supposedly latest, greatest piece of recovery-based technology or health and wellness technology that doesn't really have any foundational roots in our history as humans. Cold plunge is one of those. And frankly, most of what we do at Recover Lab passes that litmus test. And cold plunge, again, is one of them where human beings have been exposing themselves to severe and extreme cold for its benefit. And there's a tremendous amount of benefit. The research shows, I can probably like you already know this, it's showing that we're converting white fat to brown fat. Obviously, we're burning calories. There's cold shock proteins, which is just another physiologic response. But beyond the physiologic benefits, and you've already alluded to this, and I couldn't agree, I tell all my clients this, the biggest benefit that I recognize with cold plunge is the psychological benefit. You mentioned mental clarity. For me, I think of it as like a big red mental reset button. Doesn't matter the day I've had, the week I've had. If I force myself to get in that plunge, the second I step out, I'm like a blank slate. But one of my favorite times to do is at the end of the week, Friday afternoon, as I'm wrapping up my work week before I go home to my family. If I hit that cold plunge, when I walk in, it's all love, right? Because I'm just whatever stress, whatever worries, my endorphins are through the roof. I'm just like this
You're walking
ball
in
of
and saying,
loving
"We're ordering
energy.
meat heads tonight,
Just
everybody."
whatever you guys want. Yeah,
That's
exactly.
awesome.
And again, that speaks to the psychological benefit of it.
Okay.
And yeah.
I've got a friend who also has used cold plunge, and he always set his a bit higher and did longer durations. I always had mine much colder and did shorter durations. Is that just a personal preference thing, or is there some science to help make a decision in terms of how long you should be in there and temperature setting?
There is not hard science to this in the way that I've seen. What I have seen and how I understand it is the target range is between 2 and 3 minutes. And the goal is to get as cold as you can for that 2 to 3 minutes. The harder it is, I think the better the psychological benefit. I don't know if that translates to a better physiologic benefit. Like at our studio, we keep ours at 45, between like 43 and 45. But again, that's driven by the fact that we're trying to not scare anybody away. I know that is a therapeutic level and you're going to get the benefit, but there is something that happens at sub 40 degree temperatures that creates more of a painful, biting, sharp experience.
No, I feel
And
that.
yeah, I'm sure you do. And so it can be off-putting to say the least, especially for people that are trying it for the first time. I think even if you're at like the 50 to 55 range, you're still getting benefit from that. The body is still forced to respond to that cold stress. How much different that is between 50 and 55 than 40 and 45, I don't believe that there's really a lot of hard science to parse it out to that level of nuance.
Paris, when you're working with people at your facility and you're discussing this idea of pain and discomfort and trying to get them to that edge where they can experience those micro traumas and have that growth, like how do you communicate that to them? Because I think it is important to distinguish between pain and discomfort, because you don't want pain for pain's sake. You want the discomfort to be generative. But how do you communicate to that when people are maybe the discomfort to them is pain?
It's about information, right? And I think that's one of the things we really specialize in is how we educate everyone that walks through the door, right? There is a natural fear when you talk about cold plunge or what they've seen on TV or what they've heard, or you're talking about 43 to 45 degree temperature. There's this natural, they want to hesitate, and it's all about educating. I'm there in the room with them, Jordan. Sometimes I'm there to assist them. I'm there to make sure they're in there for the 2 to 3 minutes that are required. So it's really making them feel safe, and that's what it is. And I think the more education we provide to a client, the why, the dopamine release, the things like that, it breaks down that wall when we talk about how great the cold plunge is for the body. So we just load them up with information, brother. We provide a safe atmosphere, and I let them know that I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here with you.
Okay. Before we conclude, I want to ask some questions about Fresno. This is a podcast about Fresno at its core. And I'm curious, What are the commonalities you're seeing between patients? Chris gestured at this, that there we have some toxins in our environment that environmental that are causing, I'm sure, common maladies amongst patients. But I'm curious more broadly, just like what you guys are seeing in terms of patterns, like why people are coming in, or what they're do we are there common like goals in the community that you're seeing that are across the variety and array of patients you guys experience?
May I start with that one? And that is to say that there's a lot of unique things about Fresno, but we're all human, whether you're in Fresno or LA or Timbuktu, it doesn't matter. We're all looking for the same thing. We all value our health, hopefully, above almost everything else. It's one of the most important things in life. And everybody wants to, pretty much everybody, especially the people that we see, they're health conscious, they're health focused, and they understand the difference between lifespan and health span. It sounds like you've heard Peter Attia talk about this. I don't think it can be talked about enough, right? Because we are moving more into the regenerative medicine, the longevity space with a lot of the new technologies that we are bringing on, which we can talk more about. But the point is that it's not just about a longer life, it's about a higher quality of life. And that's what our focus is. And that's a commonality that I obviously see between all of our clients and members, but that's not unique to Fresno. That's humanity.
Yeah.
I don't know, Paris, if you've noticed anything otherwise, especially unique about our members or our clients.
No, it's never too late. I think that's the message also, right, Chris? It's never too late.
Absolutely.
We have clients, we have middle school kids, we have the active professional, we have the aging professional, we have the elite athlete. We have, Jordan, a mixture of everyone, right? So I think the message when it comes to longevity is it's never too early to start this. It's never too early to take advantage of some of the things that we offer.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, let's say I put both of you in charge, not in charge, maybe that's the wrong word, but appointed you as some kind of wellness director for Fresno Unified. And your goal was to help increase health outcomes given with your particular specialties with kids in a school system. I think starting kids off with the right habits is how we improve longevity for the
Correct.
outcome. Are there things that you guys would implement, strategies? Working with physical education teachers, are there certain things that you can bring from your area of expertise that you would implement as programs in a school district?
I think Paris, maybe I don't want to speak for you, you can take this, but he already mentioned the idea of a variety of sports, trying not to specialize. Paris, maybe you want to say more about that?
No, definitely, right? Not really focusing on that one plane of movement or that one sport. I'm a huge proponent of that. When it comes to And I've worked in school districts. It's like this one, we get locked into this one thing for some reason, and I do not know why, but it's really education for me. I want, if I'm a director or a medical wellness director, hey, we're gonna push education first. I want every athlete, every student athlete to understand the why. Why are you asking me to move this way? What benefit is red light therapy? Why am I doing this? Why am I sprinting? Why does my knee hurt? I don't think we spend enough time giving the proper education and explaining the why. I think, and I know, I don't think I know that's what makes Recover Labs so unique is that we put an emphasis on education and changing the experience, right? Letting you know the why, right? Why are we doing this? So, yes, if I had an opportunity to change some things in the school district, it's really the why. I would push more education on the body when we're talking to athletes of peak performance and how to perform at a high level and how to recover faster. So for me, it's education, Jordan.
Yeah. Is there anything you'd add to that, Chris?
I'll say that I agree with everything you said, and it's a kind of a motto with our patients is the more they understand, the more buy-in. And the more buy-in, the more compliance, the better the results. And so nothing can happen without a firm understanding and grasp of why it's important to do the things that we're talking about doing. Obviously, when thinking about kids, we want as much variety of movement as possible, and we want as much movement as possible any way you can get it. So if I changed anything, it would just be more opportunities to move through more and different activities. And like Paris said, just providing more education than we already do, not just on movement and exercise, but the importance of diet, sleep, hydration, all of these things that we talk to our athletes about.
Yeah, less talkies, more sleep. All right. I ask all my guests to think about how their particular discipline or area of expertise affects the way they see the city. So I have worked in education for most of my career. So when I look at the city of Fresno, I tend to look at the problems and solutions from that domain. We need more education so people can understand if they're about to be evicted, which phone number to call, what their rights are, things like that. When you guys think about your discipline and the career you chose, how does that affect the way you see the city of Fresno?
Wow. Can I go, Chris? Is okay? Really, I've been blessed enough to be in the health and wellness and athletics market for a very long time, Jordan. Really, when you look at Fresno and you're in this realm, I can't help but to think about things like obesity issues in America or how much time kids are not spending outside anymore like we used to. And I see that as a parent. I see that as a coach. I see that as a professional at Recover Lab when I talk about, and I see our youth and the amount of times that we're indoors or sitting playing video games and things of that such, where we've removed like that outdoor movement, that play, that we need to go back to doing things a little bit more old school, Jordan. And I'll let Chris talk about this, but I tell you what, I remember growing up. When I was in North Carolina, just being outside all day, Jordan, I would come inside when it's just time to eat or when the street lights came off. And you don't see kids out there being that active anymore. And I think that speaks on mental health, that speaks on physical health, it speaks on a lot of different things. That's just what I see now as a professional and as a father. I'm like, man, we need to go back to being a little bit more old school.
What would you add to that, Chris, from your perspective?
I don't know that it affects the way that I see the city. It just obviously gives me unique insight into how I can provide value to the city and the people that live here. And that's been my driving force, both Paris and mine, but definitely mine over my entire career is I'm an empath. I'm highly empathetic. I'm a caregiver. I'm a healthcare provider to my core and to my detriment, frankly, in some opportunities and situations. And so my whole purpose in life for myself and our mission with Recover Lab is to bring as much, as Paris has said, education, but also practical application of the healing modalities that we know are valuable, that can improve quality of life, improve happiness and longevity in every aspect. And so that is what drives us every day.
Okay, we conclude these podcasts each time with book recommendations. What's a book or books you'd like to recommend to listeners?
Okay, I'm in between Jordan 3 right now. Inner Excellence by Jim Murphy is excellent. The Go-Giver, it's a mixture of sales and the mind and performance, right? I live in that realm as I'm always looking to be better for our staff and grow our business. And then I have one to the left of me right now. It's a devotional and it's by Tony Dungy and it's called The Uncommon Life. Absolutely amazing. You read a couple of those a day, man. I am a man of faith also. So those are my three recommendations: Inner Excellence, The Go-Giver, and The Uncommon Life, brother.
Okay.
Excellent. I'll add something a little more industry specific in health and wellness. So we've talked a lot about Peter Attia. I think his book Outlive is fantastic. I would highly recommend it to anybody interested in anything health related. It's just such a good practical guide. Dr. Matthew Walker, Why We Sleep. We've mentioned sleep quite a few times this podcast. It's probably the number one recovery tool that obviously isn't something we offer at Recover Lab, but you can't not talk about the importance of it. And again, the more you understand it, the more you'll value it. So I think that's a fantastic book. And I think the book is it's either Longevity or Lifespan. That's another one I recommend. That's David Sinclair.
Yeah.
And just another kind of health and wellness longevity book that I found very valuable. It's been a little while since I've read it, but I remember thinking, like, okay, these are some of the books that everybody should be reading in the health and wellness space. Good Energy is another one. There's a lot of good ones, but Good Energy is also great.
Okay, you brought up longevity, so I just have to ask you, Chris, is Brian Johnson going to live forever?
He will not. I hate to end on a negative, but none of us will. So we got to make the most of it while we're here.
Amen.
Yeah, that Netflix documentary was incredible. So conclude, tell us where Recover Lab is. How do people request service? Give us kind of all the information for how to connect with you guys and reach out if people need help.
Yeah, so we're located at the Row Shopping Center, 2888 East Shepherd, right on the corner of Willow and Shepherd. And you can reach out any way that works for you. Come by the studio, come check us out, check out the website, give us a call. We're here to help people move better, feel better, live better lives. And we take a evidence-based but non-invasive and conservative approach. So it's all upside, almost no downside. And the more of this that helps you live a better life, the better off you're going to be. And that's what we're here to do.
Awesome. Paris. Oh, go ahead. You want to say something, Paris?
We're on Instagram as well. We're on all the socials, TikTok, Instagram. And yeah, stop by and come see us. Don't be a stranger. Come on in.
All right, Chris and Paris, this was fantastic. Thank you so much for talking with me. And I'm so excited that you guys are here doing this in Fresno because we need a lot more personalized medical services. That's how we get better
That's
ultimately.
right.
So thank you so
Thank you,
much
Jordan.
for taking the time to
Thank
talk to me.
you.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.